You're listening to The Bulletin with UBS, first broadcast on the 4th of January 2015 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week, we're looking ahead at the key themes and thinkers set to define 2015 in finance. All the outlooks for the year are in. There's consensus on a number of fronts, but also differences of opinion. We've asked the experts at UBS and analysts from around the world to surprise us. What could be the developments in 2015 that no one is predicting? In short, what's set to surprise us in the year ahead? We start with oil. Falling prices were a major factor over the last 12 months. Will the price of Brent crude be a defining factor going forwards? What about OPEC? Having left production unchanged thus far, might the big surprise be that OPEC realises it can't win a price war with US shale very easily and relent on its production? Here's UBS sector strategist Nicole Decker with her thoughts.
I think there are a lot of conspiracy theories out there right now, and among them is that OPEC is trying to put the U.S. producer out of business. My sense is that OPEC knows better than that. I think that the argument that the Saudis made publicly, which is, you know, we don't want to take on the burden of having to balance the global markets solely by ourselves, you know, I think that's a legitimate reason for letting prices drift lower and waiting for other producers to sort of respond from a supply standpoint. So I think as time goes by and some evidence of that supply response starts to manifest, and I'm thinking maybe, you know, it could be a multi-month process.
Looking ahead then and considering the specifics of U.S. shale oil, is there a floor price for Brent crude beneath which the U.S. shale market loses the economies it has introduced so far?
Certainly operators that have financial hardship at current prices and frankly at higher prices than what we're seeing today. Some of them can continue to produce profitably at current prices, but I think what's important to know about the U.S. shale is that, first of all, the cycle times are relatively short, so the operators can be responsive to sort of economic signals. There's nothing that says they have to drill a well today. They can wait till the price is higher to drill it. And I think that that is going to dictate some decisions in 2015. Certainly, they all have to be cognizant of cash flow and their financial health. And that's going to also factor into future drilling decisions. But over time, you know, I think what is important to focus on is how much growth in production do we need from these plays to keep the global oil market adequately supplied. And I would argue that it is at a price higher than what we're seeing today.
Are there other fronts ahead apart from this? Where's the story going to be written or painted in oil, one might say, in 2015?
I think all supply, all demand is going to be influential in 2015, and we have our base case assumptions, which is, you know, for a supply response and for continued growth and recovery in demand. And I think that would signal stronger fundamentals by the end of the year. But we've seen just even in recent years that, you know, we can never sort of model in the geopolitical issues that might impact supply. We see some economic factors that have surprised on the demand side. So, you know, these are all going to matter in the near term.
Nicole Decker there. Low oil prices look set to affect different markets in different ways through the new year. One country where oil is key is Russia, of course, and it's there we turn next. Could the falling ruble, higher interest rates and sanctions lead President Vladimir Putin to turn back from the brink? We asked Peter Hobson, the business editor at the Moscow Times. He sums up the difficulties of looking ahead and planning strategically when it comes to Russia and more particularly to Putin.
I think it's incredibly difficult to look ahead strategically. A lot of things have happened that nobody saw coming at all. And so you think you have all of the bases covered, and then something comes along like an announcement by President Putin, or an event like the shooting down of the airliner in July over eastern Ukraine, or the sudden plunge in oil prices, and just completely ruins everybody's calculations. And so you may have thought that you'd covered all of the most important bases, and then suddenly this new base comes out of nowhere and knocks all of your calculations off track. So it's incredibly hard. And when you're dealing with a political regime where all the decisions are focused in one office, and where the population is pliant enough to sort of take almost anything, it seems, yeah, there's very little predictability. You can work with what you have, but you have no idea what's coming down the line.
Brian Whitmore is a senior editor for Radio Free Europe, for which he hosts Power Vertical about Russian politics. Does he agree or disagree with Peter Hobson? And given his expertise, can he predict what Putin might do next?
The thing to look at for 2015 is not what Putin's going to do, but how the Russian people are going to react to all of this, because Russia's headed for a very, very deep recession. And now we're seeing the cost of Putin's aggression in Ukraine and the annexation of Crimea. And this is changing the social contract in Russia. When Putin came to power back in 2000, he offered an implicit social contract to the Russian people. You give up your political freedom, I will give you prosperity. Putin delivered on that promise, and people pretty much liked it. Now he's offering a new social contract. It's give up that prosperity you got for the sake of empire. And it's still very unclear how the Russian people will react to this. I think this is the key thing to watch in 2015.
The watchword for 2015 when it comes to Russia is diversification. According to the author and investor Bob Swarup, here's what he had to say.
For me, one of the things I think next year is that you'll see Russia probably doing a lot more bilateral deals with China, almost certainly with India as well, and with some other countries, in an effort to diversify all the source of revenue for their economy. And I would see the Chinese doing this just as avidly back in return, because they'll be terrified about becoming more reliant on the US dollar than they already are.
Coming up next on The Bulletin with UBS here on Monocle 24, we'll look to the USA and consider how and why the Fed might surprise us in 2015. Stay tuned. Now, it's a fairly widely held view that the Fed will hike rates this year. But with declining commodity prices, one of a number of deflationary forces, maybe the Fed just won't need to. We spoke to Kiran Ganesh, cross-asset strategist at UBS, and asked him that very question.
Our base case forecast is still that we see the Fed increasing interest rates in the middle of next year. Now, historically, central banks have done a reasonably good job of looking through price declines in commodities. So when commodity prices were rising very quickly in the summer of 2008, you know, central banks looked through that, and then they even thought about cutting rates despite the fact that inflation was very high. Now we're in the opposite situation, where commodity prices have fallen very sharply, so it means that by the middle of next year, inflation is actually likely to be very low. I mean, we're already seeing that month over month CPI in the US is minus 0.3%. That's thanks to this very, very sharp decline we've had in oil prices. So will the Fed be willing to increase interest rates even when inflation is very low? So we still think that it will, but given that they've been looking for many, many excuses to keep rates low for a very long period of time, so we think that, you know, there is a possibility that with inflation staying so low, they would use that as an excuse to keep rates low. So it is still a possibility.
So what other surprises might be in store for 2015 apart from rates? 2014 was all about quantitative easing. Will the next 12 months be defined just by rates?
I guess next year is going to be all about interest rates, if last year was all about quantitative easing. In terms of interest rates, how can they surprise? Well, if they're not keeping rates low because of falling commodity prices, then, well, maybe they'll surprise the other way and hike more quickly than we expect. So I guess there's two ways in which they can surprise. I mean, potential reasons they could hike more quickly than expected. Maybe if we do finally start to see rising wages in the US driving more kind of core inflation, then maybe they could surprise us on the upside in terms of their rate hiking cycle on the other side.
Author and investor Bob Swarup suggests the big surprise could be the Fed trialling a hike and then backtracking.
The Fed's going to be under a lot of pressure not to put rates up. I mean, Black Friday sales were weaker than expected. You know, job growth still isn't fantastic. There is still a lot of obsession about wealth inequality. Ideologically, the battle lines have been drawn quite clearly. I think what you may find is the Fed may try a rate rise and then rapidly backtrack. That might be the surprise. They actually start backtracking. And I can see that also because right now, the other thing, don't forget, is the dollar is very strong, which in effect means they're importing deflation. So as you know, the Japanese try and send their currency, you know, to the bottom of the ocean as fast as they can, and the Europeans are trying their best to follow suit. The Americans are sitting there thinking, you know what, Japan's exporting all this deflation somewhere, and where is it ending up? Well, probably in the US. So I think the Fed's actually, probably in my mind, starting to get a bit worried about these forces that are going on it. And at some point, they'll want to weaken the dollar. But how do they do that with while raising rates? The two just don't really add up.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look to China in 2015. But next, we'll consider what might come to pass in the Eurozone. It seems everyone is expecting strong earnings growth from the Eurozone next year. But we've been disappointed for so many years in a row now that maybe the real surprise in 2015 will be if it actually happens. Bert Janssen is UBS Head of European Equity Strategy. Would it be a shock to him to see this?
It would be a very big surprise indeed. If you look over the last 27 years, only 4 years out of those 27 showed positive earnings surprises. So there's clearly a positive bias on the sell side in terms of earnings growth. So it really would be a big surprise.
And how did the last 12 months reframe the narrative? Bert Janssen thinks it's all about deflation.
I think that one of the big fears or the buzzwords is deflation now. In particular, when you look at the message from the bond markets and the commodity markets, there is a real fear, rightly or wrongly, about inflation. Look at the 10-year bond yield. They have halved over the last 3 to 6 months. They came from 1.1, 1.2% not that long ago. They're now below 0.6. When you look at the commodity markets, it's not only oil that has come down, but all the other major commodities, whether it's copper or soybeans or wheat or whatever. So they're all kind of pointing towards weak demand and even some deflationary pressures. So that is, I would say, a new kind of theme for next year that we have not had so far this year.
When it comes to the Eurozone, Bob Swarup is more interested in the unintended consequences of austerity in Spain and Greece in particular.
You will see a movement in either Spain or Greece to actually start defaulting on some of the debt. And the reason for that is very simple. When you look at the unintended consequence of austerity, Spain and Greece, both of them now actually run a primary surplus. So in other words, ignoring the external debt they have, they actually now take enough in revenues to meet all of their expenditure within the country. So technically, if you were Spain or Greece, you could actually default on your external debt, do an Iceland, as it were, and not worry about the consequences. I think, the recent turmoil in Greece, which has opened up a huge can of worms, no one knows what's going to happen there. Spain, again, I think what you're going to see is increasing pressure on politicians to take a more, nationalistic line. I think Europe actually will find itself having very big political jitters, particularly as some of the other external forces on them, such as, the euro's strength, weakness, and gyrations in general, the Russian problem, all start to create increasing tensions between the member nations.
Bob Swarup. Our last port of call on this look ahead to the potential surprises in store for 2015 is China. What if nothing particularly interesting actually happens? A hard landing in China has been on everyone's list of likely shocks for years now. But maybe, and perhaps counterintuitively, the surprise for the year ahead is once again that nothing particularly interesting does occur. Maybe some interest rate cuts, perhaps a modest slowdown in growth, and, well, that's about it. Tao Wang, chief China economist at UBS, takes up the story.
Every year, people are concerned about a hard landing in China. For 2015, our baseline forecast is that the economy slows modestly to about 6.8%. And the baseline is that it will not have a hard landing, but the government actually manages reasonably well. Although we do have a 15% probability that growth will be around 5 or 5-ish. So in our definition, so there is a 15% chance of hard landing, even though the baseline is not.
What about some of the other considerations? Once again, oil being chief amongst them. What will this mean for China in 2015?
In terms of the oil price, I think China is a big oil user and it's the largest importer of oil in the world. So a drop in oil price definitely benefits China. It means that the real household income can increase, and also that to the extent it helps other parts of the world, it will help China's export. But I wouldn't want to exaggerate the positive impact of oil on China. Oil still counts only about 20% of the energy mix, so it's not that a big deal. So it's more about policy support, also about household's own balance sheet that's very strong, that can help cushion that slowdown.
And Ian Bremmer, president of Eurasia Group, also sounds a positive note on what falling oil prices could mean for China in 2015.
The fact that oil prices have gone down almost 50% in 6 months is an incredible advantage for China, which is trying to transform their economy into being less commodities intensive and focus more on being consumer driven. That's a hard thing to do if you're President Xi Jinping. It's going to squeeze a lot of state-owned enterprises, a lot of elites. And the fact is, with much lower oil prices, politically, the Chinese leadership has more space to engage in those reforms. So it's quite stabilizing for China, and it allows them to proceed with reforms that are very wide-reaching and that a lot of people have been skeptical about for a long time. Given how big and important China is, that's a big deal.
And that brings us to the end of this 13th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance every week here on Monocle 24. Keep your appointment to listen throughout 2015 and find out more at monocle.com or tune in via iTunes or SoundCloud. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.